train. Dame train.
What's up, lacrosse world? This is the In the Crease podcast. I am digital media and recruiting coordinator Dan Ayburn. I got gear editor Kyle Devitt up in the Shire on the other end. It's ITC After Dark, and we got a huge show today.
It's big.
First and foremost, Kyle, Dane Train is full steam ahead.
Where are all the haters, Dan? Where are you all?
All right. So I got a message for the wider lacrosse world. Listen, folks, I know you thought you could get there a little late, still catch the train, get on it, but you missed it. You missed it.
Yep.
But you know what? I'm here to say you can still catch up. You just got to run after the Dane train. You've seen the movies, just like in the movies. You can still catch it. You just got to run. You're going to make it. Buy the t-shirt.
Absolutely. Available now at the Inside the Cross store or at InsideTheCross.com.
Albany 11, Maryland 10. The Danes pull out an unlikely comeback against the reigning national champions, score 5 goals in the fourth quarter to prevail 11-10.
Over the reigning champs, your people, the Marylanders, the Terps, falling in this one. I have taped this game. I was busy running the scoreboard with my bullwhip, as I am now running that most of the time now. So I will be catching up on it, but I did catch score updates as it was happening. It looked like Maryland had this in hand. So what happened?
T.D. Erlin happened. That really is the key for me. He flipped the script on its head. 10 of 13 in the second half. Even better, 6 for 6 in the fourth quarter. And, you know, like, Justin Shockey got, you know, I feel like 100% of the draws in this game against him. I don't know the stats exactly, but he dogged him in the first half. And, you know, Maryland kind of took the ball out, took the air out of the ball, given how much possession they had. But, like, once T.D. Erlin started winning those faceoffs in the second half, you could just, like, see the offensive confidence of the Danes just start to take off. Got to give a shout-out, though. Connor Fields, man. The truth. You know, I said on Twitter, give this guy the Touraton right now. I said that not only after the game-winning goal, which he scored, but he also got the game-winning ground ball on the ensuing faceoff scrum after his game-winning goal. And you haven't seen it yet, but he gets the ground ball, he hears the whistle blow that they got a timeout, and he just, like, throws it in the air, almost as if it was, like, the stick flip, like that we've been seeing from celebrations lately. It was also, he's like, yeah, I just got that ball, our ball.
I mean, I know that you just said that on Twitter, but I'm pretty sure I said it 2 months ago. But whatever, it's fine.
We also probably said it last year.
We definitely did. I want to tell, like, a quick Connor Fields story. So he played with Lyle and Miles at Albany, obviously. And he was a freshman during one of their biggest seasons. I don't think it was their last season. It was their junior seasons. And he was not, like, he's not big anyway, but he was a freshman, and he hadn't filled out at all. Like, he was very tall and very skinny. And I remember, like, he ran past me. I was like, oh, hey, can I talk to you? Because he had a good game. It was a game against Harvard. And I tried to, like, kind of grab him. And I don't know what I was doing. And I got a piece of him. And he's like, oh, hey, yeah. Okay. And he was, like, so gracious and so nice. And I look over and I'm interviewing him. And I see Mar. And Mar's just, like, laughing. Coach Mar's, like, laughing. Because I was like, he's like, oh, am I done yet? I'm like, yeah, man, thanks. It's cool. And he's like, he, like, puts his hand out to shake my hand, and I'm just like, okay, thank you. And then, like, I walk over to Mar, and Mar's, like, laughing. Like, he thought it was funny. And it's so funny to see a guy that's, like, a freshman like that that probably hadn't been interviewed before, like, after a game, because, you know, Lyle and Miles got and Ty got a lot of that attention. And that was kind of – I think that might have been his first kind of post-game interview. And he was, like, really up for it. He was, like, really excited. And, like, his eyes kind of pop out when he talks. And he's, like, really an excited dude. And it's so awesome to see him now turn into this force of nature. and take everything he learned from them and everything he's learned from Coach Mara and the coaching staff at Albany and become this, like, whirling maelstrom of an offensive player. Like, there isn't a thing he can't do. I think it's remarkable. It's remarkable. And, you know, we're going to talk about Tahoka here in a second. And Tahoka's getting a ton of the hype. TD Ireland's getting a ton of the hype. JD Colarusso probably deserves more hype, in my opinion. Yeah. But, you know, Fields is the guy on this team. He's the guy. And he deserves it. He's worked really hard. And he's had the talent since day one when he was a freshman.
Yeah, so there was a very interesting defensive scheme coming from Maryland in this game. I said before the game that I thought Maryland would go with Bryce Young, their number one guy, on Connor Fields, and they would go with Curtis Corley, who's their bruiser, on Tahoka, and that actually did not pan out. They actually went with a bit of a similar defensive look from the national championship game where they had Curtis Corley on Jack Jasinski, and I actually thought that was like the critical matchup that led to the Terps prevailing in that game because Jack Jasinski got shut down. But they went with a similar look in this game where they had Curtis Corley on like the quick guy who is Connor Fields, and they had Bryce Young guard Tahoka. And for most of the game, it looked like Bryce Young was basically face guarding him. They're saying like, hey, like, don't let him get more than 3 feet away from you. And Tahoka got shut down. Like, I thought that he was going to have an impactful performance on this game. He ended up with just having an assist. And, I think Tahoka may have gotten hurt in this game, and they had him out there as a distraction. I think other people just said, like, hey, like, he's still a freshman. Like, he's not used to this level of competition. Like, he just kind of, like, ran into a different level, got frustrated in this game, and just did not have as decent of a performance as he's had past couple of games.
Well, it's interesting. So, you know, again, I want to reiterate, I haven't watched the whole game yet. Just kind of clips and pieces. One of the things that I think that lacrosse fans forget, and that, you know, wider sports fans also forget from time to time, is that the difference between really good players and great players is consistency. And you can't expect someone as a freshman to have the same consistency, even if they're the most talented person on the field, as a senior with a similar level of ability. You just can't expect that. And that's not to give Tahoka an excuse. I haven't watched the game. But I think that the one thing that separates people, and this is also kind of my experience from NCAA to MLL, the thing that makes an MLL player, I mean, there's so many players in NCAA where you're like, why didn't he go to the MLL? Well, besides salary and all that other stuff, there's also the issue of consistency, where there's guys that are All-Americans that don't stay on squads because they don't show up every day with the same intensity, or they can't keep up the game, like that actual endurance mentally to do it every time. And again, it's not an excuse, but you can't expect that of a freshman lacrosse player at the NCAA level in D1, D2, or D3. You just can't. That's not how it works. That's one of the things that you learn. You are not born with experience, my dudes. You are not born with experience. You learn. That is what learning is. And I think that this is probably a huge learning experience for him, even if he was hurt.
Yeah.
I guarantee you.
Let's be straight up. He got their number one defenseman in this game. Like, just watching it, it looked like Maryland's number one priority was, like, we can't let Tahoka get hot in this game. And they said, you know what? If that means that Connor Field ends up going off, then let that happen. And I think they kind of played with that fire for a little bit and ended up burning them. Another guy that had a huge game, Jacob Patterson. Take a bow, dude. So this kid is, he's listed as being from Arizona, but I know his family originates from the Buffalo area. So I believe he has like a box background, but this kid has a fantastic stick. And I remember seeing him in Albany's fall ball scrimmages at Boys Latin this past fall, and was really impressed. And I was like, hey, like, this guy could be a player for them in the future. Well, the future is now. Like, this kid had 4 goals in this game, was almost the matchup that won them the game in a way. You know, you can look at Connor Fields' 4 goals to assist, but Jacob Patterson had the short stick in this game, and they said, hey, like, you've got the hot hand today. Like, we need you to pick up a big play here. Ended up getting the game tying goal, slipping through some defenders with a little subtle toe drag, not a full toe drag, a very subtle toe drag. Got it off, got a pretty much a wide open look on the crease. They gave him the short stick most of this game, and he absolutely capitalized.
So we've talked a lot about Albany, or you've talked a lot about Albany. I've just told stories. What did you see out of Maryland in this game?
So, well, first of all, it kind of felt like, you know, just being around the stadium. I was at this game, by the way. Not sure if I said that, but kind of felt like Maryland's feelings were hurt a little bit. Like, oh, you know, we're the attacking champions. Like, we should beat a team like Albany. Like, you guys are going to be fine. Like, nobody is writing off Maryland after this loss, right? No. That's crazy. Stupid.
They're still number two.
Yeah.
Nothing really changes.
Yeah. And right? And another thing is that Maryland always does seem to drop a contest in March. And those games, those losses, ultimately lead to improved results down the road. Like, I remember being at Notre Dame out in California. They played Notre Dame. An abysmal offensive performance. That game made them go back to the drawing board. They ended up moving Colin Heacock to attack. Ended up becoming one of the more lights-out offenses over the next two seasons. In 2017, they lost to Villanova in an absolute shocker at home. They pretty much did not fall against another opponent besides Ohio State after that game. So, you know, I said this on the pregame show with Terry Foy. I was like, whoever loses this game will definitely be better off for it down the road. Because they'll say, hey, this is how we stack up against elite competition. We lost, but if we improve on A, B, and C, if we meet these guys again, we might get the better of them that time. So I feel like Maryland, like, they couldn't, Albany could not contain Connor Kelly. I thought they did do a good job on him late in the game, kind of getting out on his hands, saying just do not give him a chance to shoot. And I thought that they also forced, you know, some of the guys who got short sticks in this game, like Tim Rotans, to go towards the middle of the field and give J.D. Colarusso, you know, shots that he can definitely make saves against. I feel like, you know, Maryland, you know, a lot of people, they're hurt, their feelings are hurt, but it's like they're still probably going to be, you know, end of the year going to be in contention for a top four seed. Like, let's not twist this.
I mean, I don't care about anyone's feelings per se, but I think that you know what I mean? Like, I feel like if Maryland learned anything from this, it's that we can only get better. Yeah. And that should scare everyone out there. Like, this game ultimately is a bad result for anyone else that plays Maryland.
Yeah.
Because now the chip is back. It might have left for a little bit. The championship bird came down, plucked it away from the shoulder, but they grew a fresh one. And now every team they're going to play after that is going to be on the hit list. And I think this is actually like a big result for Maryland, as big as it is for Albany to win. And for Albany, what I think it does for Albany psychologically is it gives them the ability to know and trust, like you said, T.D. Ireland at the faceoff dot, and also their offense to produce in pressure situations, which I don't think we've seen. So that's one of the things that they're obviously taking away from this game, and it strengthens them to a certain point. But more so to the Maryland angle, you know, like I said, there is going to be the chip is back. You know, I mean, no one's talking about bottling their tears like I was last year at the national championship game yet, but they're not crying for anybody. And they are ready now. Like, they are loaded for bear. They're going to break down this tape Belichick style and pick out the things that they need to fix. And that is why that coaching staff is so good, by the way. Yeah. I do respect the hell out of that coaching staff. Like, they will make adjustments. They are great at adjustments. If Maryland is great at anything, it's adjusting. And I think that this result will be huge for them going forward. How does this look for Albany going forward in terms of the rest of their schedule for you?
Well, the thing is like, you know, just thinking about some of the scenarios that Albany could take, like, I feel like a lot of people circled two games on their schedule as saying, like, these are very likely opportunities for them to get beaten. One of them was Maryland, the other was Yale. And I don't know if anybody thought that Vermont would be as good as they are at this point. They got Vermont next weekend. Undefeateds, so there's a little bit of some interest right there, but I still think Albany is the strong candidate to win that game. But thinking about down the road, like, what if Albany runs the table? This win could be their signature win. And if they run the table, win the America East, go undefeated, maybe? They're looking at an easy number one seed. If they don't win the America East, they can say, hey, we got a huge quality win in Maryland. We have an at-large resume. You know, just kind of thinking the way things out, like, I think whether or not they win their conference championship, like, this win almost already puts them in the conversation for a top four seed.
I mean, they still...
There's still so much season left.
There's a lot of games left. I don't want to, like, hand anybody a trophy right now.
No.
I'm not a fourth-grade basketball coach. I'm not handing no trophies out right now. So I think they still have teams to beat. There's still things that they have to do. But if everything holds, I mean, listen, this Yale game is at the end of their schedule, and it's at Yale. It's April 22nd. So there's a lot of time between now and then. And obviously the Vermont game is probably – I think that game's going to be super fun.
Yeah. Lots of talent.
I mean, for somebody. I mean, it might not be super fun for Vermont if they can't win a faceoff and can't score right away and aren't super competitive as the game jumps, because I don't think Vermont is technically a team that's built like Albany is to come back. I think they're a team that's built to score.
Keep the
and
lead.
Score. And score. And score. Like that's what they're built on. But I believe that game will be super fun to watch. I don't think the Yale game will be super fun to watch. I think Yale will probably try and put the shackles on them. But again, we're already projecting out. It's a little too far to do that. But if they run the table, which it looks like they could, I'm literally looking at the schedule right now. It's not super impressive. Just going to put it out there. Not super impressive. And if they win the conference championship, I think there's no doubt in my mind. Obviously, even if they drop one game, they're a number one seed. 100%, I think that. And I don't think there's anybody in the America East that challenges them either. Especially since I watched Sacred Heart and Hartford today. So I just put it as an aside. We'll get to it in the scoreboard, but I just don't see that happening. So I think, you know, if you're an Albany, you know, projector, you're feeling really good after this game. Yale is still looming, sure. The conference tournament is still looming, but this was the big first hurdle that they had to get over.
Yeah.
And they did it. And it was, by the way, it didn't look great for a little bit, right?
Yeah, so...
I mean, we're not discounting Maryland's early lead here, are we?
No, and there's a few... I had a few conversations with a few people, you know, about this game. And I said, you know what? Like, you know, with Tohoka getting shut down, there's only, like, two or three guys on Albany's offense who could initiate and really produce. And, you know, Fields, Patterson, and I thought somewhat Kyle McClancy, given some of the opportunities that he had, were the guys who stepped up in this game as initiators. But otherwise, Danes were a little quiet.
Hold on. Time out. One of the things you said there. There's only two or three guys that can initiate. Who else has two or three guys extra to initiate in NCAA Division I men's lacrosse? Name them to me. Who are they? Do they need friends?
Silence.
They don't exist. They don't exist. That's why Albany is so good. You're playing against ghosts.
I agree wholeheartedly.
You can't just project out. You can't project out and say that, like, oh, they only have this. There is no only. It is this and, this and, this and, this and, this and this. It's the only way you can look at Albany. You got to look for something else that they are bad at. And I don't think that we've seen anything that they are bad at. And all the haters at the beginning of the season said that they'd be bad on defense. They're not bad on defense at all.
No.
Are they?
No. Like, J.D. Colarusso had a great game, some really timely saves. And Eric DeLuey, had, I thought, a really strong second half against Connor Kelly, and they won some really dogged, grind-them-out ground balls late in that game that were true difference makers. Like, this is a team that, you know, just watching them, what they put on tape so far, like, this is probably the best defense that they've had that I can remember. So, like, I think that's saying something. That's, like, also saying not so much, but also saying a lot at the same time. Like, I think this team is slowly gaining some confidence at both ends of the field, and they're saying, like, hey, by the time April and May comes around, we could be a complete team, and we could really have a shot at a Final Four and winning a national championship, perhaps.
I mean, just imagine if they were also sponsored by Trimeno. Imagine.
Let's give a shout out to our sponsors, Trimeno. Kyle, protein is an important part of any athlete's diet. Supplement your protein diet without excess calories and fat by going with Trimeno protein infused water. Go beyond hydration with Trimeno protein infused water packed with protein and B vitamins to sustain your game. Trimeno has 7 grams of whey protein, no sugars, no carbs, no fats, and only 28 calories. It's starting to get to that point in the year where players, coaches, and parents are looking for things to give their players after games. Trimeno should be your number one candidate. Got plenty of protein. It's really light and only 28 calories, so you don't feel guilty about drinking it. Trimeno is available at CVS, local retailers near you, and always on Amazon. Protein never tasted so good. Kyle, we've talked a lot about this Maryland-Albany game, but this was still the biggest weekend of college lacrosse, so we've got so much more stuff to cover. Let's go up to Syracuse, New York, where we saw an absolute molly-whopping put on Syracuse at the hands of their arch rival, Johns Hopkins, 18-7. Yowza.
Why have you forsaken them? The Dome Gods did not show for this game. One of my personal takes is I think a lot will be made of the Solomon suspension from the UVA game. But I don't think Syracuse had a chance once Hopkins kept cashing in on all their chances. The second quarter was a shooting gallery. You know what I mean? Like, it was not conducive to any sort of win. Dom Madonna was shell-shocked. The thing about him is the one skill that I think he showed off in this game that is going to get totally lost in the scoreline is his outlets were amazing. They were like Kip Turner, John Galloway outlets. Like, he threw bombs. The triple overtime toss against Army, that was not luck. This dude throws the best outlets in college lacrosse. And I wanted to give Cuse a compliment before we lit in, because that's the compliment I'm going to give to Dom Madonna. What did you think? I watched the whole game. What did you think?
Well, first and foremost, they brought out the throwback unis honoring the 2008, 1988 teams, and they had all that swag for nothing, Kyle. They had the sick helmets, and it amounted to nothing.
Dude, that helmet is featured in the next issue of Inside the Cross, and I killed 3 people for that helmet. I had to. I just bodied them and put them upstairs in Suite 3 where at 621 Pratt Street. Like, Gearzone's a war zone, man. You don't know. You don't know what it's like. You don't know.
A little bit of a hot take here, but I thought that this game was twice as worse, 200% worse than the Albany loss. You know?
Not a real stat. Hashtag Patrick McEwen. Not a real stat. Go ahead.
But just like, you know, I caught up with this around halftime of the Maryland-Albany game, and I really focused in on the third quarter, and I just felt like Syracuse was giving up, like, easy looks. And, like, I remember that
it was already over.
Yeah.
You watched it when it was already over.
Yeah. And it's just like, wow, like, Hopkins is laying on the hurt right now. Like, there's this one play in particular where Shaq Stanwyck dodges from X. They, you know, they get a switch on him, so he gets a short stick. He inside rolls. And I swear, he slows down and takes his time and just finishes easily. And I was like, this game is over. Yeah. Like, some of the looks that they were giving up were easy, but I also, like, would wager to say just, like, hey, like, we're out of this. Like, we're just not going to catch up. And I know, like, people will shrug this off and say, like, hey, like, we lost to Johns Hopkins. They're a legit rival. But, like, this was just a bad look.
I mean, Q's didn't slide, period. That was one of the biggest problems they had all day, is when they did slide, they slipped from the wrong place or they did it super late and it didn't work out for them. I mean, there was no adjacent help at all on anything. And Hopkins just passed around them. It wasn't even that. Actually, early on, you saw, I mean, Cole Williams was a monster in this game, scored 5 goals. But early on, he was having a little trouble getting free of his guy. And they switched some shorties on him. They threw a quick slide at him. And he ran in circles, and he looked for his opportunities. He didn't have it, and he passed it off. And then Hopkins realized, like, we can't play like that. We have to play pass, 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 make a move, pass, pass, pass. It didn't work, pass, pass, pass. The one thing that I see, and this is an overall criticism, not a criticism of Syracuse or Hopkins necessarily, overall criticism of Division I men's lacrosse this year, is an absurd amount of overcarrying.
True.
It's just an unbelievable amount of overcarrying, and it's what that does is it helps the defense. If you do 2 or 3 moves on your guy, that's 2 or 3 moves too many. You get one, and then you pass. That's how good offenses work. That's how Denver works. And yeah, they lost, but Denver at their best, that's what their whole system is built on. And even they, by the way, in that game, we'll get to it, they overcarried a bunch. So this whole epidemic of guys dodging in circles, or screw dodging, as it's commonly known, just screwing yourself into the ground, all it does is hurt your offense. All it does is hurt your teammates. So once Hopkins realized that Syracuse was waiting for them to do that, and then they stopped doing it and distributed the ball equally to all of their very dangerous shooters, who are far more dangerous when they have time than any other time on the field, they just disseminated and disintegrated the Syracuse defense with great passing, heads-up looks, and very good finishes, like underrated finishes. Like, again, I want to praise Don Badano, because he did get shelled, but he had a line on most of the shots. The thing about Hopkins is when they are on, and when their shooters have time and their finishers have time, they are very deceptive. If you look at their shoulders and their head, all of those shooters, Kyle Maher in particular, Connor DeSimone as well, the way that they deceive the goaltender with how they release the ball is phenomenal. I mean, they scored on every conceivable type of shot, except for trick shots, because we don't do those no more. But, like, they scored any way they wanted to because of their ability to deceive the goaltender and their time with the ball and on the ball. And that's how this game unfolded. And Cuse, you know, like you said, I don't know if they knew they were beat, because they kept playing and they kept, like, throwing crazy body checks and trying to get back in the game physically, but it was way too late. It was way too late when they decided to make it, you know, try to turn it into a barroom brawl. It was just too late. It was already over.
Just watching this game, I was like, what happened to that nasty defense that was so game against Virginia? Like, this defense got, their praises got sung like a Spartan war party coming home. Like, what happened? And it's just like, I was like, what happened? You know, we were singing their praises all week, and then just like, they just drop a clunker.
They just didn't slide. And I think when they played, again, when Q's played into their hands, they actually looked pretty good in the first quarter. They didn't look bad. Like, Syracuse did not look bad until midway through the second quarter, when Hopkins changed up how they were attacking and kept putting their foot on the throat of the possession game and kept getting multiple shot possessions and longer possessions. And they just turned into goals because the Q's defense couldn't recover. I've said this multiple times. I want to talk about Cuse a little bit, and I want to sing the praises of Hopkins at a later date. I've said this multiple times. I think Cuse is missing the alpha initiator, and obviously people are going to say it's Solomon, and that's why they lost the game. I don't think it's why they lost the game, but I don't think that guy has to be an attackman. It can be a midfielder. It can be anyone, but they have to step up and direct the traffic. because there are times where they're crashing into each other and there's like four people on the crease in the offense. And that's not how it's supposed to work. There has to be a release. And if you talk about like 6-on-6 offense with any number of people, one of the things that you always have to have is the guy getting back, is the guy at the top of the box who is going to control and settle down and distribute the ball to the correct people. Either he's going to the left wing, he's going to the right wing, or he's feeding down low, or he's carrying. And I don't see that guy for Cuse, and I didn't see him in this game. And it might be that they don't know who that is yet, but they need to find him soon. They need to find the soothsayer of the offense very soon if they want to get to the heights that this team has can achieve, because it has a lot of talent. I just think they're not putting it together. They're just jamming, you know, circular pegs into square holes, and it's not working. And they're just, I just think that once they unlock the formula, they're going to be good. But right now, watching them play, it seems like they're just not a cohesive unit.
Yeah.
On offense, at least.
Yeah, watching them, it's like, it looks like they have a crisis of confidence almost. And I know you said they have to have like an alpha male initiator. I feel like it was supposed to be Rafis, but I have yet to see him play a game this year against a quality opponent where he has stepped up against a pole. And when people talked about him last year, they're like, oh, Steven Rafis, like, he's got the quicks, he's got the stick. He's produced in the time that he's seen the field. I was like, but he's dodging his short sticks. That's because he's subbing out of the box and he's getting that matchup and he's just blowing by him. And like, Trimboli is very good, but I feel like they lean on him too much when things go south. Yeah. You know, watching that Albany game, it felt like they just went up to him and said, we need you to make a play. And it felt like that in this game too. And he had three goals in this game, but it's like, they keep going to him like, we need you to do something for us. Like, nobody else is stepping up. We need you to make that play. And when I think about the guys who've been that alpha male initiator for them the past couple of seasons, it's been other guys who've not necessarily been goal scorers. It's guys who've gotten teammates involved. Guys like Mariano, Salcido, Donahue, who, you know, Kevin Rice, too, going back and just saying, I'm going to produce an effort. Some guy is going to benefit from this. I'm going to give it to him. The game's going to come to him, and it's going to be his moment. I don't see that from this Cuse team yet.
Yeah, and I think one of the things you're saying about Rafis, the one thing that he didn't do in this game was change the levels of his shot. And it's one of the things that Ryan Powell on the broadcast, shout to the Rhino, he harped on, was the lack of quality shots that Cuse took, not only in this game, but previous games. And like, listen, levels are like the demo of a free video game. They never change with this team right now. They're not changing. You're playing a freemium game over and over, you know, pay the toll, change the level. I have to agree with Ryan Powell's assessment that that's one of their major problems right now. And, you know, how do you teach that? How do you work on that? I mean, there's a lot of different ways you can do it, but I mean, it's really just comes down to shooting drills and execution in the moment. You know, like all these players know, they're all great Division I players. They all shoot 90 miles an hour. It's just a matter of, okay, you do that, but you need to be deceptive. You need to have accuracy with the power. And there's plenty of power on this Cuse team. But I just think that they don't have patience yet. And that's what I think they need a leader for on offense that take all those guys by the scruff of the neck, the back of the jersey, and be like, listen, I'm going to set you up. I'm going to put you in a position to score. All you have to do is score. All you have to do is score. And I think that there just needs to be that faith. And it'll come. I actually think it'll come for Syracuse. I don't think that this is a bad team. I'm not writing off Syracuse. Okay? I might have done that earlier against the Albany loss. More for comedic effect than actual opinion. But this is a team that just needs to figure some things out. And again, it's very early.
Very early.
It's very early.
We've sung the sorrows of Syracuse so far. Let's sing the praises of Johns Hopkins. Cole Williams, man. This Cole Williams is starting to look like the Cole Williams that I saw from senior year at Loyola Blakefield, where he was just turning the corner and imposing his will, kid is a problem. 6'5", 210. He is a ton to handle when he gets going. And he's finally starting to look so poised on those scoring opportunities. This game, he just went off 4-1, I believe. And another guy that needs a ton more burn is Connor DeSimone. I think he scored the first goal in this game. He's a guy whose skill set is so multifaceted. He's got tons of shake. He's got tons of confidence just watching him play. They just need him get... I think they finally realized that they needed to get him more involved in their offense after the Princeton game. He got more involved in this game, and I thought they were much for the better because of that.
Yeah, I think one of the things about DeSimone is I think he's just realizing that he can get hit and get up. You know, and the same thing goes for Kyle Maher. Same thing goes for kind of the rest of this Hopkins offense is if we get hit in the mouth, we can just get up and shoot again. You know, I think they learned that was a valuable lesson they learned in this game. You know, another guy that had a great game, Brock Turnbaugh. It's the year of Turnbaugh. He Turnbaughed it around. He did 10 saves, did a great job. He's, you know, even though he doesn't wear sweatpants, he's still in that goal doing his job. You know, he's not trying to do too much. He's not trying to make 60-yard outlets. You know, one of the things that's really improved with Hopkins, especially in the last couple of weeks, is their clearing. Don't think we haven't noticed. You know, it looks much better. The Poles are handling the ball. They're not just running in a straight line or looking straight to the wing. You know, they're trying to make plays, and I think they're able to make plays. The confidence is growing at Homewood, and the confidence is growing with the Jays. Like, make no mistake about that. This game is only going to make them better, for sure. Yeah,
can't talk about this game without talking about Hunter Moreland. He continues to produce 17 for 26 at the dot in this game, and I'm not sure he's looked this healthy his entire career at Hopkins. Like, he is noticeably quicker off the draw. Just watching, you know, that's really just an eye test kind of thing, but he is noticeably better. So let's finish this by analyzing a few things. Hopkins crushes Cuse. Cuse narrowly defeats Virginia. What do we make of that?
So we're going to get to this in the scoreboard, but if my math is right, maybe UVA isn't that good. Maybe they're just okay. I mean, listen, Stony Brook put 14 on them today. Lost by one goal because they threw the damn ball away despite being on man up with 20 seconds left and what can only be described as an epic choke job. UVA also only beat Manhattan by 3 goals on Tuesday night and didn't score and didn't reach 10 goals against them. Alex Zingaro ball out, 18 saves for the Jaspers. UVA needs to figure out some stuff on defense, and they need to figure it out now.
And we will get to that. But first, we got T-shirt pitch of the week. The much-aligned T-shirt pitch of the week. Kyle, what do you got for me?
I mean, again, we're running out of ideas. We should kill this segment. But one of the things that I've seen is we've gotten a lot of reaction to our analysis on this, and Inside the Cross, we've gotten a lot of reaction as a whole to our picks when we pick games. So, like, maybe our T-shirt pitch is grow the game, asterisk, but only if I can still control everything about the sport. Only if you like my team. You know what I mean? Because everyone says that. Everyone's like, we all want to have lacrosse be the best sport in the world. And to many of us that work in the sport, it is the best sport in the world. It's the greatest thing that ever happened to us. I've said this many times. Lacrosse saved my life. But here's the thing. We're getting all this heat from coaches in post-game interviews with our colleagues. And it's like, you should be sending us fruit baskets for all the free motivation we give you. It's free. You're not even paying for it. We are your locker room bulletin board material. Recognize you are welcome. That's what we're here for. That's not what we exist for. We exist to create this content and have this podcast, have fun, and explain games and give our take on scores and players and all of those things. It's the highlight of each of our weeks, I guarantee you. Probably more Dan's than mine. But still, highlight of the week. Highlight of the week. You know what I mean? So maybe t-shirt of the week is like, don't get mad at our picks. I don't know. Maybe it's like I picked against and insert someone's name. Because people just get salty. They like look at the picks and they're like, oh, they hate that other team. Listen, you might as well put a gun to my head and be like, pick between these teams. Because that's what the email says. The email is like, pick a team or die. It's literally like, pick one of these two teams in this game. And you're like, I don't know, this one. That's how the picks go. Just want to pull the curtain back a little bit, guys. It's not like we're sitting here trying to deviously like mess up your life by picking against your team. Like, don't take it personal, man. Like, you really need to relax. And also, you're welcome for the motivation if you get any. Seriously. Maybe just like t-shirts that say you're welcome. And just like hashtag ITC. Done.
So
we've already made t-shirts out of this segment, by the way, that you guys haven't even seen yet. And I'm so excited. So excited. They'll come out.
So speaking of things that, you know, wanting to control everything about the sport, in the next game that we're going to talk about, won't spoil which game it is, by the way, there was a face-off contest that lasted for 45 seconds. So my t-shirt pitch of the week is hashtag ban the face-off.
Oh my God.
Just kidding.
Why would you do that? That's not a funny joke.
Yeah.
Someone's going to find you now.
Yeah.
You're going to get your car is going to get keyed. You can't say that.
So when I leave my house on Monday morning, I'm expecting to see Greg Renlein outside my house with some sort of sharp object.
Oh, God. How scary?
I'm all scared. Right.
Straw poll. Who's the scariest person in lacrosse that you would see outside your door waiting for you? Who would frighten you the most? Is it Beast?
It might be Beast. But let's Beast. Let's say that Beast spins the narrative and he calls up Scotty Rogers and says like, yo, Danny Burn made disparaging remarks about all the special teams players. You with me on Monday morning? He's like, I'm with you, man. They show up outside my house. You never see me again. True Detective Season 3.
Let me tell you who it is. For someone that's interviewed him once and made eye contact with him once for half a second. Because he's a ridiculously imposing man. Do you know who it is?
No.
The God, Bill Tierney, son.
You mean Dr. Dre.
Yeah. Still working on the chronic too. But yeah, Bill Tierney is probably the last dude I want to see outside my door. 100%. Guy's like 66 years old. Don't care. Don't care. I talked to him after the Big East final when his team lost, and I thought that he was going to reach over the table and strangle me with his mind. Dead serious. Just scary. Scary. Authoritative. That's why he has all those championships. Just Jedi mind tricking you.
Speaking of Bill Tierney, Notre Dame 11, Denver 9. Very interesting result in this one.
Yeah, you know how that there's the cliche of, oh, well, Denver ran out of time to make the comeback? You could say that, but I think that it's still their fault that they dug a hole they couldn't get out of. And also, to throw some praise for Notre Dame, because I generally don't do that much, I think we forget that Notre Dame is very strong at home. And if you let them pile up shots, they will score. They're not inept at anything that pertains to the game of lacrosse. Nothing. They drill everything. So are they over-drilled? Sure. Are they inept? Never. Never. Notre Dame is never inept at anything, which is not something you can say about very many teams in college lacrosse.
Yeah, just watching this game, it seemed like they foiled Baptiste as much as they could, and they came out with the emotional energy that they were going to need to win this game. They probably took a long look in the mirror after that quarterfinal loss last year and came into this game saying, we do not replicate that result at all. We are going to get ours in this game. Another thing in this game, free Mikey Drake. Free Mikey Drake. The freshman had a great game. And another thing, actually two more things. I don't know how Notre Dame wins when Mikey Wynn scores 0 goals. And two, did Ryder Garnsey even play in this game? 0 goals, 0 assists for him.
Decoy City, man. Decoy City. I want to actually put some praise also on freshman keeper Matt Smith's shoulders, because even though he looked shook during the Denver run in the fourth that almost got them back in the game and almost got them, you know, got them within one goal, I think he only finished with 8 saves, Schmidt did. So the last one he made was to close the door on it was a little over a minute left. If Denver scored on that, it was on. And I feel like that save was a career making moment for him. And I've said many times that goalies run on confidence. And I think that that save will fuel Schmidt and his bus for a very long time. I think that's a huge moment for him. And because of that, a huge moment for this Notre Dame team.
Yeah. So Kyle, I've got my binoculars here and I'm looking for Denver's quality win. Where is it, man? Cause I don't see it. Cause like Carolina is not holding up after getting smacked by Hofstra.
Yeah.
The rest of their wins are as such: Air Force, Furman, Cleveland State. And watching this game, it kind of felt like it was going to play into a similar narrative where, like, they were going to come back because they had Trevor Baptiste. They had all these really efficient shooters. Maybe they ran out of time. They also kind of just made a few mistakes late. They couldn't convert. They couldn't really get their offensive sets going as quickly as they needed to, especially in, like, the final 2 minutes of that game. So I'm still out here, like, looking for Denver's quality win because they're a top-5 team, you know, always seemingly in the conversation as a perennial Final Four contender and a consensus Final Four pick when we talk to some of our colleagues. But they have really yet to pick up that quality win just yet. So what are your thoughts on that?
First of all, you're just focusing on all the wrong details. Denver's quality is in their ball movement and ability to create momentum. Now, who are the best teams in college lacrosse at killing the effectiveness of ball movement? Number one is Notre Dame, which you saw in this game. And what is a team that can kill momentum with adjustments? It's Duke. Both Denver losses. Both notable Denver losses that could have been great Denver wins for in each of those games. But I still believe in Denver because all those shooters are going to come good. This team shoots the out of the ball. They do. That's a fact. Bleep that. Know that. It's true. This team is unbelievable from just inside 14. And there is no other team in the country, except for maybe Albany, and Albany doesn't have the amount of power that these Denver shooters have. Okay? This is... Denver's quality win will come, and if it doesn't come, they will still win the Big East tournament, and everyone will still be scared of them. That's just a fact. That will happen. If Sean Mills' shot goes in on the break with about 2 minutes left in this game, it's a completely different result, and I believe Denver wins. He went high to high.
Mistake. Yeah, I saw that.
You know? That was it. That was the chance. But what got them to that point while they were down and dug, but and I said this, they dug themselves the hole. Notre Dame put him in the grave and buried him. But Denver dug the hole. And they couldn't get out in time. There wasn't enough time for them to get out. That was the key play to me. That save by Schmidt was the key play. And that's the save I was talking about earlier. And I think that Denver is because of Baptiste, because of all these shooters, because of their offense, they are scary to any team. They are a handful to plan for any team on the earth. I just 100% believe that. I just think they're so effective at getting what they want. The problem is that they get lost in the six on defense against a team as regimented as Notre Dame. And if they don't, if things don't go their way, I don't think that they have shown the ability to come back against anyone. And that's the next step for them. I think that that will happen. I thought it was going to happen in this game watching it. I really did. But that one save stops the momentum. So that's why I think that save was so important for Notre Dame, by the way, because that gave them confidence going forward. But I think that Denver is still searching for that talisman, for that absolute thing that they can rely on, look back at, and go, that's where it turned. It's coming, though. I believe it. I believe that they will come out of the mountains and come good.
I think that's kind of my point, though, is that I feel like I watch this team, and it's like this offense is so efficient. They're getting the ball for the majority of the time. It just feels like there's something missing, and I agree with you. I feel like it's going to come at some point, and it might take a lot of teams by surprise. Because, you know, Ethan Walker, man, he's going to get his. Colton Jackson, Drew Sapinski's playing great past couple of games. This team's going to find a way eventually.
Also, Denver looked super fresh in this game with their Warrior gear. And you know where a place you can find some Warrior gear? Silentswap.com. Silentswap is where lacrosse players buy and sell their gear. Shop heads, helmets, shafts, and gloves for up to 70% off or snag hard-to-find college and pro gear. And all purchases are backed by Sideline Swap's buyer guarantee. Head to SidelineSwap.com. That's SideLineSwap.com. Or download the iPhone app today. This week, we debuted, by the way, with your help. Thanks for the help, for the assist on that one. Our first edition of Copper Drop from Sideline Swap, featuring two heads that I strung, the Brian King 2 and the ECD Rebel O. So you can go back and vote for those and check out that post from iogear.com. And definitely check out silentswap.com. Shout out to the dude that bought one of my heads this morning. Appreciate it. I'm going to spend that money in a dumb place.
All right, Kyle. The much-beloved segment, Weird Watch of the Week. You had an ultra-weird one last week. Do you have one for it?
An untoppable weird watch.
It was so weird that we're now on to a normal watch of the week.
Yeah, normal watch of the week. Man. All right. I guess, so I know this is like a Netflix-themed kind of segment here. So I guess I'll just go with the last Netflix movie I saw, which was Mute by Duncan Jones, who is the son of the dearly departed David Bowie. And I think it was like his third or fourth movie. He did Moon previously, which is very good, also on Netflix. I recommend that over Mute. This movie had no editor, and it's wildly apparent by watching it. It's just, I don't even want to describe it to you. I don't want you to watch it. I don't. It's got one of the Skarsgård guys in it. It's like a tall, attractive Swedish guy. So if you're into that, I guess you could watch it for that. It's kind of sci-fi-ish, guy that can't talk, hence the name Mute, and is future Amish, which is now a thing. Kind of goes through the disappearance of his girlfriend, figures it out. Paul Rudd is in this movie, and the movie, and by the way, spoiler, don't watch it. I'm going to spoil it for you. The guy ends up stabbing Paul Rudd through the throat and then saving Paul Rudd's kid on a bridge. End of movie. You're welcome. Don't watch it. Weird Watch of the Week, presented by insert sponsor here. All right, we're moving on to Scoreboard.
It was a huge scoreboard.
Let me tell you, this was insane. And I can tell you that from firsthand experience because a ton of these games got dumped in my lap. And I watched as many as I could. For most of them, I was scoring. we're going to start with a very underrated upset, and that's Lehigh 9, Army 7. Dan, what's your take?
Lehigh is mad decent, man. They've got some players on this team. You know, Andrew Pettitte is having that quote-unquote great statistical season but won't sniff the Tourettan finalist end-quote year. They've got a great defenseman, Craig Chick, a really decent faceoff guy. This is a team that has made a little bit of noise in the Patriot League so far this season, and they just pretty much got a noise complaint with this big win over Army.
Yeah, I think this is a huge upset, and we'll get to Patriot League later. It's kind of a mea culpa for me, Patriot League, because I definitely sang the praises. And listen, they're producing great results, but I don't know if the games are great, but we'll get into that. Lehigh coming good after a slow start is huge. And Lehigh is a team that has high profile recruits coming in and doing work and getting indoctrinated into their system. Guys that are getting used to getting reps at this level. And this is a statement win for the Mountain Hawks, 100%.
Next game, Georgetown 12, Hobart 9. I believe Georgetown is now one of three teams that are undefeated in the country.
Let me ask you, when does G-Town get respect? I know Hobart isn't a top 25 opponent, but they're not bad. Hoya Baxa. That's all I have to say here. Look out. Look out for G-Town.
In the top 20.
Yeah, but I think they're top 15.
Okay.
And a couple more wins, they're top 10. I said it. I don't feel bad about it.
Next game, Cornell 9, Penn State 7. Another, I don't want to call this an upset because I feel like these are relatively even teams, but
mid-tier yeah. teams. That's what we're going with, teams that aren't impressive. Go ahead.
But
mid-tier.
Yeah, a mid-tier team beats another mid-tier team, but I think Cornell low-key on the come up. You know, a lot of their best players are freshmen and sophomores. Jeff Teat being one of them. He's a player in this game. I think, you know, I predicted that Cornell would have a bit of a bounce back here, and they almost beat Albany not too long ago. Had a 9-7 lead late in the game. Did not end up working out for them, but I feel like the reason that Albany, you know, was close in that game is not because they stunk, it's because Cornell was pretty good.
Well, I don't think they're low-key good. I think their problem since Pinnell left was that they lacked an identity, and now they have one, and that identity is very Canadian. They might as well be riding horses out here with hats on. Like, they play super Canadian, and it works. It works. Like, you're right. Jeff Teat, he's going to make Team Canada for the FIL. Like, that's going to happen. He's going to be there, and he's going to be a problem for USA defenders and every other defender out there. Mark my words. I don't care if he's a sophomore.
A Philadelphia showdown in our next game, Villanova 8. Penn 6. Kyle, your take on this?
I just feel like this game should mean something, but on a day like this, it's like I'm reading two teams in a scoreline. Like, maybe if I was in Philly eating a cheesesteak watching this game, I'd feel different, but I think Villanova was supposed to win, and I think Penn made it interesting enough, but Villanova only scoring 8 goals doesn't really excite me. And I think Penn needs to get into the habit of scoring more than 6 goals to be considered and given the respect that I think that they think they deserve. I don't know if they deserve it, but I know that they think they do.
Next game, Colgate 16, BU 9. Together now, Kyle.
We trusted you, BU! We trusted you! What did you do? Why? And this is where I make the whole I come around full circle. Patriot League is not. Listen, I oversold Patriot League in the season preview. I'm going to admit to that right now. The games aren't necessarily good, but the league itself still is. It's a murderer's row of mid-tier pillagers. They're all good enough to come in and steal your win. but no one is good enough to get to the Final Four. Ooh. I'm going to say that right now. Ooh. Sorry.
Mean.
Sorry.
Mean.
I know. Mean. Mean Kyle. Oh.
Kyle mean.
Oh, no. Kyle's mean. Grow up.
Next game, we got an OT big one. Princeton 15, Rutgers 14. Austin Sims, after going 0 for 9 against Johns Hopkins, finally hits the cage in OT. And then Rutgers got worked in every statistical category and still managed to tie Princeton in this game.
Oh, who's mean now? Huh? Who's mean now? Who mean now? That's a rough take on Sims. But this was Sauer's game, as every game he plays in is his game. 3 goals, 6 assists, 9 points. It's like 9 points with a shrug. It's like, yo, we won. I balled out. It's fine. Don't worry about it. He's like out of the mob. He's like the guy that they bring in to whack people and not talk. He just does a job. He just does a job. He kills them softly and then walks away. 9 points richer.
Next game, Virginia 15, Stony Brook 14. Kyle, you watched this game. WTF, man.
I don't know why. I don't know why. There was a scuffle on the sideline. Amorcino got ejected. It was a whole thing. And then UVA went on a crazy run right after it happened. 4 straight goals. And again, we talked about this earlier. Stony Brook then just like went on a crazy run with like no time left. Justin Schwenk won the faceoff with about a minute left. UVA was running the ball out. And they called a moving pick. And Schwenk chucked the ball into the empty net. Got a flag. Stony Brook goes man up. There's like 17.5 seconds left. And what do they do? Oh, I'm just going to throw this ball out. I don't want to win this. I'm just going to throw this ball away. Like, that's... I don't know. I don't know what to think about that. And UVA didn't do anything to force that. They chucked it, man. That's tough. That's a tough way to lose a game. I don't know if I still have Stony Brook getting like face crushed by Hofstra in my head a couple weeks ago from doing the Tuesday night roundup. So I can't reconcile that team that got, you know, absolutely like throat cut by Hofstra being a team that can hang with UVA, but it happened. It's a wild season. I don't know what it means. I think I said before, I think it means that UVA just might be okay. Maybe they're not amazing like we think they are. And the Ryan Conrad injury, which I don't know if we've talked about that yet, that's a huge deal. That's a huge deal. And I saw the effects of that, you know, that Tuesday night against Manhattan where they only won 8-5. That was very apparent. They were looking to dox a little too much. And, you know, Manhattan was quick to go and didn't give them a lot of space. So I think UVA has a lot of things to work out in the next couple of weeks. And we're going to find out where they're going to sit in the ACC sooner rather than later.
Next game, Robert Morris 12, Marquette 2. Put respect on Bobby Moe's name. Respect.
Two? You are out of the top 20, fam. Bye-bye. That's two. Come on, man. Two. Talking about two.
All right.
Two.
Next game. A big game.
Two.
Duke 13, Loyola 9. You know, watching this a little bit, kind of on my side eye as I'm watching some other games, Duke took control in the third quarter. They looked like the top team that we've expected them to be. Still really like Loyola. You know, I think they just let this one get away from them.
It was almost like this game took place later in the day. It was almost like this game was, it felt like it was impacted by the rest of the games. As someone who's watching the rest of the games, where it's just like, dude, I don't have any energy left for Duke Loyola. And they didn't either. This game was uncharacteristically slow-paced until the second half. I said this to you kind of pre-pod. I think Loyola is the best team in the Patriot League, but I also think that one of the things they struggle with is team speed. And I think you see it against a team like Duke, where the Duke midfielders just look a step faster, just straight up look a step faster than them in transition, in the six, even subbing. I thought it was pretty apparent that Duke was going to win this game.
Final game, a later one, Towson 7, Ohio State 6 in OT. Dude, what is going on with Ohio State? Are they bad? Question mark?
No. Ohio State's offense is not great, which can be mistaken for a team being bad. I actually think Ohio State is still a great team. I had them ranked as high as 3 in the last 2 weeks in my personal media poll. I really like what I see from them until they get trapped in a 6-on-6 pressure situation on offense. And I think that what they do is they look to LeClaire, and if LeClaire doesn't have a matchup, they look to Jasinski. And if Jasinski can't burn his guy, they just move the ball around until someone else comes up with a solution. It's one of the teams that – one of the things that Towson did to beat them and to come back and score the game-tying goal with like a minute left and also score the game winner, which Mazza did, was they kept running off of picks. And I think that if Ohio State ran off of more picks and did more things like Towson did in this game, they would have easily won. But they didn't, and I think that they got, you know, Ohio State gets called for shot clocks a lot because they cycle a lot on offense. They cycle that ball 2 or 3 times before they start. And listen, that's a thing you tell high school teams, college teams, like, just move the ball around. Just get a feel for what they're doing. Well, with the shot clock now and the stall clock, I don't think that we have that. And, you know, we had my favorite ref in this game. So, of course, that they got a bunch of stall calls. He's not my favorite ref, by the way, and you all know who he is. But it definitely came down to a couple, like, one of the last calls of the game was Ohio State got called for a stall, and they thought that the goalie made a save, and he clearly didn't. The Towson bench goes insane, pulls the other ref over, and is like, there should be 2 seconds left on the clock. And they just stop play. Everybody stops. They go have a little tea party, and they're like, 2 seconds. Throw up the two fingers, like, I'm in charge. It's 2 seconds. I'm going to screw this team. Yeah. And that's what happened. And then Towson went down and won. Great move by Mazza. Just got underneath his guy and scored a very impressive finish.
Incredible effort.
Yeah.
Incredible effort.
Absolutely acrobatic.
He's like, I will score this goal. I will score this goal.
That's yeah. And they needed him too. Trust me, because there wasn't a lot of other heat coming on that, on the Tiger O.
It was one of the big plays of the weekend, but I'm not sure if it was the Adam Shirilambita's play of the week. You've got some candidates, Kyle.
So I always go for the, let's call them less obvious ones, hipster ones, if you're trying to be mean, which I understand because I was mean the whole podcast, right? Sorry.
Very mean.
I'm the mean one. Joel Tinney throwing an absolutely pristine one-handed trail check to helicopter dispossess Dave Lipka from Syracuse. It was a perfect microcosm of that game because that dude thought he was clear. He was in the box. He's like, oh, I'll be good. Like, I'll be fine. I'm just checking the ball in, and I'm going to pass it. Didn't even get his stick up, and it was behind his head. And Tinney just threw just a world-ruining check. And it's weird to put a check in play of the week. It just illustrated the game so perfectly for me. A UMass Paul also had a full crease dive dunk, but like it was against NJIT, so nope.
It's so funny that you brought up the Joel Tinney yard sale, first of all, because I actually thought the same thing. I saw it happen. I was like Joel Tinney, like casually running behind a guy who thinks he's in the clear, checks him from behind, ends up getting the stick on the ground. Joel Tinney takes it the other way. I was like, man, if you could summarize the way this game is going in one, like, 5-second sequence, is that. So we'll give it to our man Joel Tino in this game. He's our Adam Shirilambita's play of the week, his trail check. That is our show, Kyle. It was the biggest weekend of college lacrosse yet. We still got so much energy, man. We bring that smoke.
Let's keep going. What are we talking about? What are we doing?
Who wants this smoke?
What are we doing? What are we talking about? Talk about two? Two? Marquette, two? Two? Man. There, sometimes, like, the score line, doing the scoreboard, I'm just like, this is broken. Something is broken. And it's not. It's just the wild and unpredictable world of NCAA Division I men's lacrosse. We're so happy that you allow us to bring it to your ear holes. We love doing it every week. Thanks for listening. You can catch me on Twitter or Instagram at TheKyleDevitt. Dan, where can they grab you?
They can find me at Dan_Ahburn. As always, guys, we appreciate the listen. Tell your friends, leave a rating, subscribe. We'll see you next week.